This is PhotoBizX episode number 210, and something a little different again for today's show. I'm interviewing Karen Sperling. She is an artist and she's learning photography. But here's the thing, she's using her talents right now to help photographers reach up to $40,000 for a single print, or should I say, piece of art. That interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you a full-time, part-time, sometimes, anytime, a little less than full-time but way more than part-time, wedding, portraits, commercial, landscape, architecture, boudoir, newborn, day in the life, food, music, or hipster cafe photographer that's looking to drive your business to success? Then join Andrew, the fed up, had enough of your shit podcast host for today's episode of PhotoBizX, the podcast that used to be used for wedding or portrait photographers and is now used for anyone who wants to listen.
I hope you enjoyed that brand new intro. That copy was thanks to Sean Weber. Sean, mate, thank you for coming up with that inside the members Facebook group. If you don't know what that was all about, I put a question or a short survey to the members inside the Facebook group asking what kind of photographer do you specialize in and are you full-time or part-time to get a bit of an idea of who the premium member is. Well, what an absolute crap fight that turned out to be. It turns out PhotoBizX, which I designed around wedding and portrait photographers, doesn't only have wedding and portrait photographers listening. There's a good chance that you are all the different things that Sean listed, plus any other combination you can think of, which is exciting. So I had to scrap that little survey, and I will send out a proper survey to find out exactly what kind of business you're running or hope to be running in the future. Sean, mate, thank you for the copy for today's intro. I do appreciate it, and I hope you enjoyed it too.
You're listening to PhotoBiz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. I was worried today's show was not going to get out. The last hour I have spent chasing a mouse around the house. Not only that, I've had Linda absolutely screaming the place down. I mean, I'm sure neighbors thought someone was getting murdered in our place. Roxy, our little schnauzer, our miniature schnauzer, she helped me corner the mouse, which was bordering on the size of a small rat, so we're not really sure exactly what it was. But yeah, we got it out of the house finally, but it really has put a dent in the progress for today and what I was hoping to get done by this time. Anyway, the mouse or the rat is out of the house. Linda is happy, and I can tell you it's been a very, very stressful morning. As far as work goes and the photography business, things have been good. I photographed a wedding. I've had a couple of portrait sessions. Bookings are coming in. But more than anything, I've been working super hard to try and finish off a course on the Facebook ad strategy. If you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time at all, and certainly if you're a premium member, you'll be familiar with Bernie Griffith's Facebook ad strategy back from episode 136. It's the easiest way to generate bookings and sales and weddings and portrait sessions fast. And I guess that's why we've revisited the topic in three separate episodes. And it's the one thing I get asked about the most, particularly by new members. Instead of referring you all over the place to different episodes and different blog posts and videos that I've recorded, I thought, righto, it's time to put all this in one place and create a course around that. So that's what I've been madly working on. I've got a role play phone call lined up tomorrow morning with Jacob, who's going to play the role of a soon-to-be groom who filled out one of my engagement session questionnaires. So that's going to be part of the course as well. And really, it's going to be the A to Z of putting together Bernie's strategy all in one spot. So yeah, that's what I've been working on. If you are a premium member, this is the first you've heard about this too. I don't think I've even dropped a hint inside the members Facebook group. You obviously already know all this stuff, but of course, I am going to make the course available to you as well. I haven't worked out pricing yet, but for you, if you're a premium member, you'll be saving between 80 and 90% on the cost of the course. So fingers crossed, I'm going to get that completed this week. have a couple of members look over it, see if they can see things that I've missed, things that aren't clear enough. And I'll be approaching the premium members that have already had so much success with this strategy to give it the fine tooth comb before I release it. All right, I have got a massive episode today because in addition to the interview with Karen Sperling, which I think you're really going to enjoy, it's something different to what we usually cover in the podcast. There's only a very small part of this interview that I've saved for premium members. You know how sometimes you listen to an interview and you hear one piece of content, one thing that the interview guest shares and you think, oh man, that is gold. That is awesome. I had never, ever thought of that. That's amazing. Well, there was one small part of the interview that stood out to me like that. And Karen just breezed over it like it was nothing. And man, I latched onto it. So yeah, that is the small snippet that I saved for premium members. And the reason I've done that today for this interview is because I really want you to hear as much as you can from Karen, because I love what she's doing. I think this is a pretty exciting technique or strategy that she's talking about. Anyway, we'll get into that in just a minute. Look, also in today's episode, I want to tell you about some new social media software that I'm using to schedule my posts and to manage how all that happens in the background. I've just changed from one company to another, so I'm going to talk about that because I know how difficult it is to keep up with social media these days, and this has made life a lot easier for me. I've got a competition on how you can win a pro subscription to Smart Slides for 12 months. I'm looking forward to sharing that. And I've got a second mini interview with Mark Rossetto. I jumped on the phone with him and he started spitting out all this sales stuff. I was like, wait, can I call you back and record this? And he kindly said yes. It's a short little snippet, 20 minutes or so, with Mark Rossetto talking about sales. So that's coming up after the interview with Karen. All right, let's get on with this show.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
Last week, there were two interviews that went live. The first one was for this podcast, PhotoBizX, and that was with Kate Densmore. She's a US-based day-in-the-life photographer. She's also the author of a fantastic book on that style of photography. If you haven't heard that interview, go back and check it out, particularly if you are into that documentary day-in-the-life style. As far as takeaways for me, Kate has a really interesting business model in that she's doing more than just photography, and photography makes up part of what she does. I think for takeaways for me, though, and what I could use in my business was the way that Kate was targeting other photographers for her day-in-the-life photography business. And I know that takeaway may not apply to you, or it may not fit in with what you want to do for your day-in-the-life photography business, but to me, it makes good sense because you certainly know if you're shooting this style that it is difficult to get word out there that this style even exists, and then even more difficult to find people that are happy to pay the amount of money that you need to charge to make it viable to be at someone's house shooting for 12, 18, 24 hours or whatever you're choosing to do for your sessions. Photographers are the perfect target. I mean, they understand the value of photography. They understand the value of your time and your skills and your talent. And they understand what day-in-the-life photography is. And that's exactly what Kate has done and the way she's structured her business. I think it's great. I think it's a great idea. I think it's worth investigating if you are into this style of photography, particularly if it's an avenue that you haven't explored in the past. Now, shooting other photographers or photographing other photographers, I should say, is stressful in itself. So be prepared for that. Maybe practice on a photographer friend if you're thinking about going that route and giving it a try. But I think it makes great business sense. So again, Kate Densmore, have a look at her book in the Craft and Vision store and check out the interview if you haven't had a chance. In regard to the second interview, it was with Paul and Kate Atkins of Atkins Pro Lab, and that was for the Photography Experiment podcast. I had an absolute ball chatting to Paul and Kate. They are the consummate husband and wife team / comedy act. I was laughing. I found myself laughing the whole way through that interview. I've had comments from listeners saying that they've almost had to pull over their car to stop and listen because they were laughing out loud while they were listening to Paul and Kate. Aside from the laughter and the fun, I learned a ton about fine art paper stock, what it really is, certainly what it isn't. And I also discovered some pretty amazing products that are unique to Atkins in formats and styles and designs that I had never, ever considered. So yeah, have a look or have a listen to that interview if you haven't heard it, but have a look at their website. If you hear that interview, you'll know that they did mention, or Kate mentioned, a special offer for listeners. I didn't mention that in the show. It was my mistake. And they have offered 20% off for your first order. So if you want to check out Atkins Pro Lab, I have links to them in the show notes, but you can just do a search for them, Atkins Pro Lab. They're in Adelaide, Australia, but they do service photographers from all around the world. And you will recognize some of the photographers that they're doing work for on their website, which is gorgeous, by the way. It's a beautifully set out website, really, really nicely done, which is all thanks to Kate. She's the brains behind that side of things. So yeah, mention PhotoBizX or the Photography Experiment podcast and you'll get 20% off your first order there. You do have to apply as a pro photographer for their price list. I did this. I have done this since the interview. It's very, very simple. It's an email. They check out that you are legitimately a pro photographer. Then you go from there. So that's the Photography Experiment podcast, episode number 16.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is Karen Sperling, who is a Los Angeles-based portrait photographer and artist. She's been painting commissioned portraits since 2003 and has exhibited her fine artwork in New York's Chelsea Art Section, and her work is held in private collections internationally. Karen is also an expert in the software program Corel Painter, and she's been writing books and teaching the program for longer than anyone. She wrote the first several painter manuals when the software debuted over 20 years ago, and she's the author of many how-to Corel Painter books, including the popular Painting for Photographers series. Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Andrew. Nice to be here.
So tell me, Karen, how did you get started in the whole Corel Painter thing?
It was really a quirk of fate. My background was I majored in English in college and I minored in art. My mother was an artist and I've been painting since I could remember. But I didn't pursue art after college. I actually pursued journalism and I was a writer and editor for newspapers and magazines. And I got involved with the Macintosh when it first came out in the late 1980s and got involved with the New York Mac User Group. I was living in New York and I was the editor of the newsletter that was published for the user group. And the lady who was doing the volunteer production coordinator work asked me one day, just out of nowhere, because of my journalism background, would I like to write a software manual? It was for a program called Color Studio, which predated Photoshop, and they needed somebody to write a section of their manual, and I said, sure. And the guys who programmed Color Studio went on to create Painter, and they liked the job I did on this one little manual I did for Color Studio. So they invited me to write the first Painter manual. So the reason I say it was a quirk of fate is because it could have been a spreadsheet program, but as it happened, it was an art program, and it gave me an opportunity to do what I was working as already as a writer, writing the steps, but it also gave me the opportunity to paint, to illustrate what I was doing with the steps. So I had an interesting background, and getting involved with Painter was an interesting use of my background. And the rest, as they say, is history.
If you look at your, or if you were to describe yourself today to a stranger, do you consider yourself a painter, a software manual writer, or a writer, or a photographer? How do you describe what you do?
Yes.
All of the above?
All of the above. And I think that that's what I like about what I do, that it is very diversified. When I was in school, I was one of these kids. I was in every single after-school sport, every single after-school activity. I could never focus on one thing. And that's what my career has turned out to be. It's an interesting question that you ask me. I don't know if anyone else can relate to this, but when I'm painting, I want to be writing. When I'm writing, I want to be painting. It's a crazy kind of a thing, and that's what keeps it interesting, that there's never a dull moment focused on one thing to get bored to death.
That's great. So the photography part of the equation, is that sort of just to facilitate the use of the software, or do you enjoy photography and make money from photography as well?
For me, photography has always been a passion that I have never pursued professionally. I've been taking photographs. It's interesting. My mother was an artist, but my father's big hobby was photography. So I've had a camera as long as I've been painting. I've always had a camera and I've always had art materials from as long as I can remember. But the photography, in fact, I have a friend from high school who I've reconnected with on Facebook, and he laughs when I talk about photography because in his mind, he remembers me as always being a great photographer, but it's not something I've ever studied. And here's what's happening as far as your listeners are concerned. The thing that I do now is two things. I teach photographers how to turn their photographs into paintings in Painter. And I also paint commissioned portraits based on photographs for both photographers and directly for clients. And I am actually at this moment taking photography lessons to formalize my photography skills because turning photographs into paintings, the better the source photograph is, the better the ultimate painting will be. It's not like you can, I mean, you can start with a bad photograph and turn it into a good painting, but really it's half the battle or three quarters of the battle. If you start with a good photograph, good from a traditional photography standpoint in terms of good posing, good lighting, just all the things that photographers study that I never studied before and I'm studying now. And my interest in it is that I want to pursue direct client portraits more, and I don't feel that my photography skills are up to par yet. My painting skills are great, and I can paint for photographers, but I'm not at a professional level taking the source photograph. So that's what I'm working on. And I'm loving it too. It's fascinating after all these years of being a photographer to actually study what goes into a photograph in terms of tones and lighting. It's fantastic.
What about all the things you've learned about as an artist, as a painter? You know, is that all transferable to photography? Is that what you're finding as you're learning photography?
What's interesting is they're kind of the same and they're kind of different. I would almost compare it to learning Windows software and learning Macintosh software. They're both computers, but they're different. And it's also the difference between learning Corel Painter and learning Adobe Photoshop. They're doing the same thing, but they're different. And so the photography and the painting are similar in the sense that in both, you want to know about tones and you want to know what makes a good portrait in terms of the lighting and what you're seeing and how to depict it. The difference is that the photography, you're learning how to set up the photograph and control the light. In the painting, I'm controlling the light by simply painting the light and the darks. So it's a completely different skill set. You want to know what the ultimate result is. The ultimate result is going to be the same set of guidelines that make good tonal quality in a face, for instance, in both photography and art. And the difference is that the painting, you're creating those tones by actually painting them in. And in photography, you're creating those tones by setting up your lighting and your posing properly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So the photography and the painting or the finished art that you're talking about today, would you say it's traditional? Is that how you would describe it?
The paintings?
Yeah, like the style of portraits that you're talking about that you might convert to a painting either through painting itself or through, you know, using the Corel software.
Well, that's an interesting question. The fact is there is no answer to that question in the sense that I like to point out to people that there isn't one set Corel Painter or even traditional painting look. It can be any look that you like. And if you think about traditional art over the centuries, it's all art, but it's all very different. I can tell you that nowadays, many, if not most, photographers like a traditional classic look in the paintings that they're offering to their clients. But there is a segment, I'm also finding, of photographers who are interested in offering something different, something more impressionistic. In fact, I was just commissioned by a photographer. She actually commissioned two paintings for me to paint for her as samples because she feels it's important to offer one kind of painting that's very traditional and classic and conservative and photorealistic looking for that segment of her audience. But she also commissioned me to paint a very impressionistic painting because she loves the style and she believes that if she loves the style, she's going to find clients who also love the style. So she wants to be able to offer both. And that's very interesting to me because at my website, I set up my galleries according to whether the paintings are, they range from classic, conservative, photorealistic paintings to impressionistic, very painted portraits and everything in between. And the reason I do that is because I can paint in all those different styles. And I like to offer all of those different styles because I feel that there are people out there, the photographer's clients and ultimately my clients, will have the ability to pick and choose. And that's one thing, maybe you want me to tell you a little bit about the process of turning photographs into paintings. Would you like that?
I would in just a sec. When you're saying create a painting, or, you know, are you talking about actual painting, like with brushes and paint, or are you talking about creating an artwork digitally using the software?
That's exactly what I wanted to tell you, the process.
Okay, so it's not both or one or the other.
Okay, so I'll tell you. It's today, the state of the art has come down to the following. Certainly, you can do either a digital painting or a traditional painting, but here's what most photographers are offering their clients today. They're offering a sort of hybrid that includes both photographic and painterly effects. So the process is most of the time an artist is going to paint a photograph in Corel Painter and turn it into a painting. Then it's going to be printed out onto canvas that's usually either gallery wrapped canvas with stretcher bars or mounted on some kind of hard kind of a support like Masonite, or sometimes even to paper, I should add. And so if it's going to be printed out to paper, that could be the end result, the print, and then it can be matted and framed and offered to the client that way. And if it's printed on canvas, whether it's mounted or on gallery wrapped stretcher bars, those canvas paintings can then either be the end product, and you can offer that to your client framed, or just even sometimes just as gallery wrap canvas because it has a sort of contemporary look. Or what a lot of photographers are doing is they're getting the printed canvas then painted, overpainted, or enhanced or embellished with traditional paint. And they're either opting for just clear acrylic, which gives the canvas a texture and brush strokes. Or what I'm doing is I'm adding oil paint to the canvas, which adds value to it and gives it not only the brush strokes and the texture, but also a sort of richness and a translucence that adds to the digital painting underneath. So it's sort of a hybrid. And the reason that this is so popular today, because a lot of people who have never heard of this will say, well, if you're going to paint, why don't you just start the painting from scratch? And what's desirable about this process is that you get paintings that have very photorealistic faces that look the same as the subjects in the photographs. And then you get more brushstrokes and painterly effects on the clothing and on the background. And clients like that a lot. It's nice to have a painting, a traditional painting, that's the artist's interpretation of the people, that's, you know, very artistic, but not everybody goes for that. Some people just want it to look like them. And they're happy to see a little bit of a painterly touch on the areas other than the faces. So that's the popularity of this particular technique today.
Have you noticed that it is becoming popular in the States?
Totally. What's been happening is I'm finding that several things are happening. To me, one of the main indications is that there are a lot of photography labs that do the printing of either paper prints or canvas prints for photographers. And it seems that nowadays, many, if not all, of the labs are offering this kind of technique. So that tells me that it's very popular if they're finding that they have requests for it, if they're offering it.
Are you suggesting that the labs will organize a painter, an artist, to come in and apply brush strokes with traditional paint to a photo?
Yes, the labs are offering, they're offering both the Corel Painter art, turning the photograph into a painting, and they're also offering to apply the acrylics and perhaps oil paint. I'm not sure. I would assume so. Truthfully, I haven't really looked at it this specifically, but I assume that, I would think whatever a photographer wants, the lab is going to have for them. And if I could add that I'm not in competition with the labs, it seems to me today that as a photographer, you can either go to a lab to get the painting done, or you can choose an independent artist. And what will determine the choice will just be looking at the portfolios of the lab and of the independent artists and deciding if what styles would appeal to your clients. Again, it's like I said before, it's not like we're all painting the same way. It's that the photographer has lots of choices today as to the kind of look and style that they can offer to their clients. And that's why people will choose me. They'll be interested in my style of painting, or they'll choose the lab because they're interested in what the lab is showing. So it's good to do research and to figure out what it is you want to offer to your clients.
Sure. I mean, you're talking to a listener that may be in the UK or Canada or Australia. If we know an artist, or if we like an artist's work, say at a local market stall, or maybe a local artist has a gallery and we like their work, you know, is this the sort of thing we could go to them with a canvas and say, can you do this? Or does it require something special?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I would say that certainly if you meet with an artist someplace and you like their work, you could ask them if they could do this, but they wouldn't necessarily know how to use Corel Paint or even how to paint in Photoshop, which is another subject. I'll just do an aside before I get back to that answer. The aside is that I'm talking about painting in Corel Paint, and the question that always comes up is, well, can't we just do this in Photoshop? But we already own Photoshop. And the answer is that Photoshop is much better at image editing, doing things like controlling tones and colors and resizing and selecting, that sort of thing. But Painter still excels with its paintbrushes and its painting tools. And so I would always recommend painting in Painter. It's going to be easier and there are going to be more choices in Painter. So that's the aside. So in any case, getting back to, you know, running into an artist and asking them to turn photographs into paintings, if they are not working with digital tools, they're going to be happy to paint for you. And it's just going to be a different kind of a look. I could also add that, I mean, I could paint, you know, theoretically, I could paint here in the States for someone anywhere in the world. You know, I'm painting on a digital file and then I can send them back a digital file and they can still have it printed at their lab. And most photographers do opt for adding clear acrylic strokes, which sort of give the canvas, as I mentioned, a textured kind of a look. And you could have your local lab do that so it would avoid the costs of shipping canvases between the United States and every place else, but I could still do the digital file here. So, you know, it's kind of like we're sort of freed up as far as that goes. But, you know, I wouldn't discourage a photographer, because I feel it's real important that we're talking to clients and we're looking to make clients happy. And so, you know, certainly if a photographer comes across somebody locally and says, oh, I must have this artist to create my paintings based on my photographs, I wouldn't discourage that at all.
Okay. So would you encourage the photographer that's listening, if they wanted to try this, to hire a professional like you to do the Corel Painter work, or to learn Corel Painter themselves?
That's an interesting question too. It really depends on the particular photographer. There are definitely two ways to go with this. On the one hand is the photographer who has zero interest in learning how to paint, is completely busy with their photography business, and not only don't they have any interest in learning to paint, but they simply don't have the time. And that's the time to hire somebody to do it for you, and don't think twice about it. It's perfectly okay. The other side of the coin is all the people who study with me. There are photographers who are people who always wanted to learn how to paint. And as soon as they open Corel Painter, they're in heaven. It's the most exciting thing they've ever seen in their lives. They'll make the time. They love it so much that they're going to find a way to do it themselves. And so you definitely have that sort of person as well. It really depends on the individual. There is no should about it. It's not like photographers who aren't interested in painting should get interested. And it isn't like the photographers who want to learn to paint should hire somebody else. It's really up to the individual photographer what they'd like to do.
Okay. So how much of the work or the photos that you work on go and receive the extra treatment? So instead of just the acrylic, they get some, you know, some actual oil paint on the canvas.
It's another interesting question. And I would say that it's almost split half and half. I've had photographers say to me that there is no way that they wouldn't have it painted with oils by me, that they think that that's the part of the painting that they're offering to their clients, and it's completely what they need to have. And they love that it's adding value, that, you know, you can call it an oil painting. I would never encourage anybody to lie. I would never say, don't tell anybody that it's digitally done. I call it mixed media, and I tell people about the digital part and the oil painting part. But as a mixed media painting, it's still an oil painting. And so there are some photographers who feel that that's really great, and that's part of the sales pitch. And, you know, they think it looks better as an oil painting, and down the line, that's what they want to offer. But I also do have photographers who just want the digital painting from me, and they just want to have the lab put some acrylic strokes on it and be done with it. And their clients are happy. Their clients think they look fantastic. So it really, it just is a matter of taste.
Mm-hmm. When I first heard about you, and that was via Ritzy Schwartz, and he told me about this phenomenon that's going on in the States about having these photos painted or to, I guess, recreated or added to make them look like a painting, my first thought was, that's not going to look good. Because we've all had a bit of a plain Photoshop, you know, and played around with those different effects. But when I came to your website and looked at your work, I thought, wow, like these look like expensive pieces of art that you could see in, I imagine them in particular types of homes, large homes, expensive homes. So I guess my question is, look, let me talk about one particular image I can see on your website. It's under the Windsor heading on commissioned portraits.
Yes.
And you have a photo there or a painting there of a young girl, and she's holding a flower. She's looking down over her left shoulder, sitting on a chair. Do you know that photo? Do you know the one I'm talking
about?
Yes. Okay. Is that an oil painting? Has that had oil paint applied to it?
They're all the same thing. They're all created in Corel Painter and then the printed to canvas, and then the oil paint is added at the end. And I would say to your point that really, in my view, it's so important to know the art history and the art theories in addition to knowing the technical aspects of the software, because that's how, and I thank you very much for the compliment, but that's how the paintings have that extra added something, that I paint all of my paintings based on art theories that have been handed down through the centuries. And in my view, there's no difference between painting with a Wacom stylus or painting with oil paint. I'm still using the same art theories about composition, color, tone that have been passed down through the centuries. So that's why those paintings have that added extra something, because they're all hand painted and they're all done with an eye toward what's come before. I think one of the big mistakes that people make is that this is just the paintings, you can either just add a filter, or, you know, you can just smear some pixels in Photoshop and you're going to have a painting. And I like to remind photographers that that's like somebody who comes along and says, oh, well, to take that photograph, you just click the shutter, right? You know, it yes. ignores the fact that the reason that one person's photo is so much better than someone else's is because they've paid attention to time-honored photography theories about lighting and posing. And it's the same thing with art. You know, I take the compliment and I appreciate it, but I also have worked very hard on improving my painting over the years. And so I really do feel that it's a learned skill. And I do feel that anybody who has a mind, who thinks they can paint, they probably can with learning the art theories and practice. And that's really what I've done. You know, it's funny because when I paint for photographers, they're a little bit intimidated at first. And I say, you know, I'm really just here to serve. And this is just a skill that I'm offering you. I mean, I have worked for many years on this skill, but it is just a skill. And I think that if somebody is interested in learning how to do it, they can. But I disagree that it's just adding a filter or just clicking a button or just smearing some pixels.
I agree. And I hope that wasn't what you took away from my comment, because if I do that in Photoshop, that's the impression I thought I was going to see when Richie said, go and see what Karen's doing. You know, this is what people are buying now, and this is getting popular in the States. And my first thought was, well, I remember playing with filters in Photoshop, and I certainly wouldn't be offering those to my clients. And it was such a lovely surprise to see your work and think,
oh, thank you.
Wow, these look amazing. Like, they really do look amazing. My question now is, you know, if you're working that closely with a photographer and you say you're there to serve them, how much input do they have and how much do you offer in regard to the finished look of the photo and the painting?
It's another interesting question.
I'm good at this question asking.
Yes, you are. And it's completely up to them. The whole conversation is, what are they interested in? And certainly we start off with, here are my galleries, tell me which one you like, only because it's a starting point. It's a way to have something tangible to talk about. But I always tell them the same thing. This isn't about my artistic vision. This isn't about me and how I see this should be. It's all about them and how they see it should be. Sometimes I will offer some input in terms of art. Like, one of the things that photographers don't really consider as much as artists do is choosing color schemes and adding color harmony where the colors are actually matched throughout the image. And I like to add that to the painting. And photographers don't always agree with me. Many times they say, just paint what you see in the photograph. And I say, okay, I will vote for adding colors, but if I'm voted down, that's okay. I never go to battle when I'm offering my ideas. In fact, it's really just to help the painting and help with the client. But after I've done this for a long enough amount of time, I've learned some very, very big lessons. For instance, I'm not allowed to change the color of a child's dress to fit my color scheme because the mother might have been shopping for that dress for 3 months to get the perfect color. So things like that, you learn early on that there are some things that cannot be changed. But it won't stop me from making the suggestion, because sometimes the mother couldn't care less. And if it makes the painting better, she's all for it. So it's those kinds of conversations. But the final decision maker is always the photographer. Just like when I paint directly for clients, the final decision maker is the client. I would never...
Really? I thought that would be you. No. If I come to you as the client, not the photographer, as the client...
Yes.
Aren't I hiring you for your creativity and your vision and your skill?
Yes, and I will give you my input and I will tell you what I think and I will make suggestions. But if the client is then going to say, well, I hate that, then, you know, then I won't do it.
Sure.
I can't do something if the client isn't going to like it.
Well, okay. So which are your favorite clients, the ones that give you complete freedom to paint your vision?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I won't turn down somebody who has very specific ideas about their vision. Let me put it to you this way. To me, portrait painting is commercial art. It's really trying to satisfy the person who's hiring you. I think that's really important. If somebody's paying for something, I think it's really important that they're happy. Mm-hmm. And where the creativity really comes in is when I paint my abstracts. That's when nobody's standing over me telling me, okay, put that line over there. You know, I can do whatever I want. And really, whether they sell or not is going to be up to the marketplace. But there are no bosses. So that, you know, I kind of see that division that way, that if I want to do fine art, then that's certainly my vision and my ideas. But if I'm going to be hired to do something like paint a portrait, then I'm there to serve.
Yeah, well, I find that you're in such a difficult position, because if, let's say, I came to you as a photographer with a beautiful portrait and you've enhanced this portrait with your fantastic skills and your painting, it's my name going on that finished piece of art for the client. Doesn't your name deserve to be there too?
That's a question that comes up all the time, and I really do feel it's up to the photographer what they want to do. I don't know how to explain it. It's just that the original photograph is by them, and yes, I've enhanced it. I've made it into a painting, and if they want to give us a joint byline, then I'm happy to take it. but, you know, sometimes they feel it doesn't serve them, that it serves them better to, I mean, to be honest, I don't quite understand the idea that they want it to look like they did it if they didn't. But on the other hand, I don't know if that's really the case. I think it's more like that they want to show that it's their photography studio and it was part of their team that did it. I don't think anybody's really looking to, maybe there are photographers who are looking to make it look like they specifically painted the portrait. But I think it's more of a case where they want it to look like it was from their studio, which I have no problem with. That's okay. Just, you want me to paint for you, that's fine. I once had somebody who asked me to sign their name on the painting.
Sign the photographer's name?
Yeah, which I couldn't really relate to. And I said, are you sure you don't want to just sign? I said, I don't care if you sign it. I feel a little awkward signing your name. And they sent me the signature of how they wanted it to look. And I just said, I don't know about this. I finally said, sure, I'll do it, just because I'm not going to argue. But fortunately, he said, okay, I'll do it.
Okay.
I was like, yay.
That's a strange request. How long, Karen, does it take you? Well, let's stay with that one particular photo that I talked about earlier, that painting that I get so mixed up. I'm calling it a photo. You probably refer to it as a painting.
Oh, absolutely.
The painting of the girl sitting on the chair, looking down over her left shoulder. How long did you spend on that particular piece of art?
It just depends. It depends on how straightforward the photograph is. Sometimes things have to be fixed and depends on how busy I am and it depends on how much time I have. I can do them very quickly or they can take a little bit more time. It also depends on whether the photographer is then going to have the painting overpainted with the oil paint, because then there's drying time for the oil paint. So to give you a figure, like I could probably do something with a turnaround of 2 days for the digital painting, but I would rather have a couple of weeks to do it. So something like that. Here in the States, the photographers are getting 2 times, 3 times, 4 times and up for a painting what they get for a similar sized photograph. So just for argument's sake, if they're getting for a, let's say a 16 by 20 photograph on gallery wrapped canvas, if they're getting $1,000 for that same size for a painting, then they can charge $2,000 and up for it. And it's getting to the point I have heard as high as $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. I have one photographer, for instance, who did study with me, who's getting $10,000 for 30 by 40 paintings. But I have another photographer who told me he's getting $20,000 for 16 by 20 paintings. He didn't study with me. He's just somebody who calls me all the time.
I bet he does.
Yeah, it's funny because he said he likes to pick my brain, but then I wind up picking his brain about marketing. And that's one of the questions I asked him. How are you getting $20,000 for a 16 by 20? And he says, I ask. And yeah,
simple.
He feels that his clients, he's finding clients. These are people, I don't know if you have this where you are, but here in the States, very rich people will donate money to, for instance, hospitals. And when they build a wing of a hospital with the money donated by somebody, they'll name the wing after the person. So it'll be the Joe Smith wing of such and such a hospital. And this is who this particular photographer's clients are. He'll find these people, I don't know where, but he'll find these people and he'll take their photograph and then turn their photograph into a painting and charge them $20,000 for a 16 by 20. But that's not everybody.
But that's pretty cool. So he's targeting the people that have already got the money, who have opened, well, have sponsored the actual wing before they've even thought about having a photo. He goes, what a great idea.
Yes.
That's very smart.
I mean, there are people with lots of money who are paying lots of money for these paintings. That's one of the things that I'm looking forward to doing after I learn how to take the photograph, is to go find those people myself. But I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, wow. Because he's made it so easy for them to say yes, because he turns up, takes the photo when it's done, and they get a beautiful piece of art at the end.
Yes.
Wow.
By the way, I wanted to add about that this whole technique sounds new to you, but the fact of the matter is that actually doing these digital paintings has been around now for about 20 years or so. And in the past, I've been involved with artist groups, and certainly there's always going to be people who are not going to count digital paintings as the same as traditional paintings, although as time goes on, there's less and less resistance to these. But I must say that I know that in gallery shows in England, in Australia, through Europe, I know that there's actually been less resistance to digital art compared to the United States. There, I remember seeing digital artists who are able to sell their work there sooner than they are here. So it may just be that it hasn't gotten to the photography arena and turning photographs into portrait paintings. But I do know that artists have been using digital tools around the world for many years already.
Wow. Well, I don't know anyone in my circle that is doing anything like this, and certainly not with the kind of success that you've described, you know, and the sort of dollars that some of the photographers are getting in the States. You know, if it's been around for 20 years, why do you think it's become popular now? Or more popular?
Another excellent question, Andrew. I think it's probably just like anything, the longer something is around, the more accepted it becomes. I think what happens, not talking about the art world at this moment, but talking about photography, I guess what happens is enough people start to see these paintings hanging in their friends' homes, and so they go ahead and they want them too. And enough photographers are showing them in their showrooms so that, you know, there is this growing acceptance just because I think they're seeing them all over the place. In fact, you asked me before the question about how can I tell that they're becoming more popular, and I told you because the labs are offering them more. Another example of why I think these paintings have become more popular is because on Facebook in the photography groups, I'm seeing more and more where photographers are posting questions like, my client just asked me if I can do a painting based on their photograph, and I don't know if I can. Does anybody know about that? And that to me is some kind of a miracle that the clients are coming to them asking for paintings. So it just says to me that the acceptance is growing.
Yeah, that's good. I've got to ask you, Karen, when I was looking at your website, there was one product that jumped out to me, and it was the TV
covers.
Isn't
that unbelievable?
Can you tell us about that? Because that's very, very cool.
Yes. What they have nowadays, I'm working with a TV cover manufacturer. I'm their exclusive artist. And what they do is they offer the opportunity to people with large screen TVs in their homes to cover up their TVs with art. And it comes in many different forms. That either you can have a photograph on your TV covering it up, or you can have a set piece of art. In fact, they license out Kincaid paintings. So you could actually have a Kincaid painting covering up your TV. And they also, I'm their exclusive custom artist. If somebody wants to have a portrait or a landscape covering their TV that's custom painted, I can paint it for them. And in fact, I've done some examples. Are one family likes to vacation at this particular chateau in France. And so I painted a scene of the chateau and it covers their TV. And another family has a house on the east coast of the United States, and they have a lot of sandpiper birds on their oceanfront property. So they wanted me to paint a painting of sandpipers by the shore, which is what I painted. And the way it works is the TV cover rolls up into the frame when the family is ready to watch television, sort of like a convertible car top. And then when they're done watching television, it rolls back down over the television again.
So the one on your website, it's got a big frame, a beautiful looking gold and white frame with decorative edges, and that goes right over the whole TV screen. And then inside the frame is the painting, and that actually rolls up inside the frame when the person wants to watch TV. Is that done by hand or is it automatic?
The rolling up?
Yes.
That's an excellent question, Andrew.
It looks like a press button thing and it would just roll up. That's the way it looks.
That's what I think. Truthfully, the company is located on the East Coast of the United States, and I'm located 3,000 miles away on the West Coast of the United States. So I've never actually seen one of these things in person, but I have always assumed that, like you said, it's a push-button thingy, and it has some kind of motorized thing that it lifts up and then it comes down again. I don't think the person is doing it manually.
Right. And the beauty of this for photographers and artists is that TVs are getting bigger and bigger. So this can only be good for us if this takes off.
I think so. The first time I saw it, it was a funny thing. I called them up and I said, this is amazing. And I got the owner of the company on the phone. So we had a nice conversation and that's how I got the gig to be his painter. And I called him as soon as I saw it because I think it's brilliant.
Me too. I think it's such a fantastic idea. I've never seen anything like it until I saw it here on your website. Just beautiful.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody's doing it. I would think, I mean, I want all of your listeners certainly to, I mean, if anybody's interested, they can contact me and I can put them in touch with this company. But I would hope that they have similar resources in other countries because I would think that shipping costs would be very high from the United States. But, you know, maybe if they have wealthy enough clients, maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, true. Do you still get time to write? What do you write apart from manuals? Do you write for pleasure and
what
for fun?
What do I write? It was a very funny question because I write movies.
Oh, do you really?
So when you said you have time to write, it's like you caught me. How do you know that I'm doing that?
Well, I didn't know that you wrote movies. I knew that you wrote books and manuals. So you actually write movies for yourself? Or how does that work?
Well, it's my hobby that I hope one day will become a, maybe not a career, but certainly I would love to get a movie produced one day. But I feel it's important to really, it's just like I feel that it's important to know the art theories and all the technical aspects of painting. I think it's important to know the technical aspects of movie writing. So I've been doing it for quite a long time, hoping that I'm doing it correctly. I don't know, but it's fun.
So that more for pleasure than, I mean, I know that you've got the dream to have a movie made, but is that your outlet, your creative outlet?
That's pretty much that and painting abstracts. Those are my two creative outlets. And it goes back to what we were saying before that maybe that's why I really don't mind if a photographer wants to dictate what a painting should look like. If he's hiring me, I'm happy to do it. If he or she is hiring me to do it, I'm happy to do it. And really it's with the movies and with the abstract art that I'm doing my own thing. So I see a separation of the two. But also, as far as writing, I did just finish my latest painter book only a couple of months ago. So I worked on that for a few years. So that was a big thing to finish that book and get it out there. So that's what else I do. Maybe I'll start another painter book.
Are you commissioned by Corel to do these or are you just...
Oh, I wish.
Oh, no. You're not, really?
No, I'm completely on my own. I self-publish my painter books. The reason I self-publish the painter books is because I actually had the experience of publishing for publishing companies. And I've also, in my travels, I told you I started out as a writer before I got the painter manual to do. So I actually was an editor in the textbook division of Glencoe McGraw-Hill. So I have had a lot of experience with publishing. And I just found that I know the painter market better than the people hiring me. And I've had the experience writing books for publishers that they want me to do things that I don't agree with because they don't know the market as well as I do. And plus, I have found that I do all the proofreading and all the copy editing and I get it all the way I want it to be. And then they don't know the software like I do, so they make changes. It just seems like it's all a lot of extra time and effort. So I just started 3 books ago, my Painting for Photographers Volume 1, I self-published through Amazon and it worked out great. So now I've done Volume 2 and Volume 3 and I'm thinking the next one is going to be a Photoshop painting book, although I'm not sure because I really do feel it is easier to paint in Painter, but I know a lot of people would like me to show them how to paint in Photoshop. And another thought I have is there is an awful lot, talking about Richie Schwartz, there's a lot of interest in pet portraiture and pet photography and pet paintings. And it does occur to me that I would love to do a painting for photographers on pets. And I think I would like to do it on painter because, again, I think it's easier to paint in painter, even though I know people would like to see one in Photoshop. We'll have to think about that. But that's another thing I'm thinking of doing.
Nice. If the listener was thinking about giving this a try, like in Corel and having a play around in Painter, which of your books is the best one to get started with? And let's say it's predominantly a portrait photographer.
The current one, Painting for Photographers, Volume 3. And the reason is it's interesting. I've been working on my techniques over the years, and all of my instructional materials have all different techniques. People ask me that all the time. If I buy several things from you, aren't they all going to be the same? And I always tell people, no, the painter is like the alphabet. The English alphabet only has 26 letters. And then look at the millions of books people write with those 26 letters. And painter's the same way. Painter has a finite tool set, but then the techniques and the things that you can do with the tool set is unlimited. So all of my instructional materials are all different. But the reason I would say to start with Painting for Photographers Volume 3 is that it has all the current things that I've been doing with Painter, and it does start from scratch. It does give you the basics of the user interface and where things are located and what the tools do. And it doesn't assume that you know anything. It is a beginner's book, but it's also for anybody who's been using Painter and they just want to see how I do stuff. All of the different Painter people do things differently, so the book has my techniques.
Nice. Okay, great. Well, I'll link to that in the show notes along with anything else that you've mentioned today. Just to finish off, you know, you've made reference a few times today, Karen, about, you know, knowing the traditional artists and seeing, you know, what's gone before you in history as far as art's concerned and needing to know those techniques and those lighting styles. And I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, but do you have a book or do you have somewhere that you go to reference and learn that sort of thing that you could recommend to the listener?
Yes. Painting for Photographers, Volume 3.
Oh, so you cover the traditional art in there as well.
Yes, and I'm not sure, but I may be one of the only painter instructors who includes art. There is, I don't know if I'm the only one, but I don't think everybody is. Yes, I think it's very important. I don't even think you can talk about painting without talking about art theory. And so in the book, in addition to the step-by-step instructions, I also include art theories and also art history. So that's why I think it's useful. It's gotten all 5-star reviews on Amazon. I mean, I think, let's put it this way, it's the kind of book, if I were to be starting out with Painter, it's the kind of book I would like to buy. So that's how I wrote it, with that in mind. It's really for somebody who wants to know the art theories and also the painter steps and also come out with saleable portraits and also landscapes. I do cover landscapes, and I also cover composites in there because composites are really popular today, where you take, like, I have a photograph in there. It was a photograph of a girl and then my photograph of flowers, and I combine them so that the girl is sitting in the flower, and then I made it into a painting. So I describe how to do that.
Fantastic. Karen, this has been an absolute pleasure. It really has. Where is the best place for the listener to go and check out more of your work and see your books and, you know, and what you're doing?
Well, the book that I was mentioning, Painting for Photographers, Volume 3, is available at Amazon around the world. And my website is artistrymag.com. And Artistry Mag, I started a painter magazine called Artistry Magazine. So that's where artistrymag.com comes from. And it's just grown beyond that.
Fantastic. Well, I'll add links. And you're also using Facebook quite a bit as well.
Yes.
So you're there as well. Okay. I'll add links to all those in the show notes. Karen, again, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, Andrew, thank you very much for having me. And thank you very much for all of your interesting questions. I think that this is a very interesting growth area for photographers who are looking to do something that sets them apart from their competition. And that's also very desired by clients when they see these paintings. And it's a very unique kind of a product category. And I think that your listeners will probably find it very interesting.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to seeing some of their work once they take the next step and get in touch with you and see what they can come up with, you know, in conjunction with you and in regard to their photography. It'd be awesome.
Very cool. I'm happy to help. I always tell people I love to encourage people to paint because no one ever encouraged me, and it took me many years to figure out that I wanted to paint. So I'm here to encourage everybody who's interested in doing it to paint.
And look, so we didn't talk about this. The best way for someone to find out pricing and more details is just to email you?
Yes.
Perfect. Beautiful. Thanks again, Karen. It's been great.
Great. Thank you, Andrew.
All righty. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Karen Sperling. Karen, if you're listening, again, thank you so much for coming on, for sharing your thoughts and views. I love what you're doing. It's not a huge thing in Australia yet like it is in the US. I certainly can see that it will catch on. And I've got to say, I really love what you're doing. I think it just adds a whole new level to photography and a whole new layer, I should say, to photography. And the fact that there's the possibility to get the kind of money that your clients are making from their prints, it's pretty exciting. It really is. So again, thank you for coming on. I've got your details in the show notes. So if listeners do want to get in touch with you and find out how much it would cost to have you work on one of their photos, they can certainly do that very, very easily. For you, the listener, I hope you got as much from that as I did. I hope you loved the whole idea of what Karen's doing. I hope you can see something in what she's doing that can affect and help you in your business. And like Karen said, if you want to learn more from her, send her an email, get hold of one of her books or her latest book, and give Karel a try. I've got links to anything and everything that she mentioned in the show notes, and you can find them at photobizx.com/210. And I encourage you to go and check out the show notes for today's episode because I do have, in addition to those links, examples of Karen's work as well. You've got to see this stuff. Like it really is beautiful. And I don't know if I should say this, but when I first heard about this, I thought this is going to be a little bit kitschy. I just couldn't see that this was going to be anywhere near as good as what it is. Karen's work really did blow me away. And I urge you to go and check it out and have a better idea of exactly what she was talking about. It's pretty exciting stuff. I was talking about smart slides from Pixaloo a few weeks ago. In fact, I interviewed Daniel Yasenko, the CEO and one of the founders of the company. And I've since signed up for the software. I've been using it since before that interview. I absolutely love it, and it's getting better all the time. And we've been talking about it inside the members' Facebook group, and I know it's gaining in popularity all the time. Well, Daniel has come back to me because he's seen all the chatter inside the members' Facebook group, and he said, look, how would you like to give away a 12-month pro plan for smart slides to give away to PhotoBizX listeners? So I jumped at that. I think that's a great idea. And I was thinking, well, how do I give away a copy of this? Who do I give it away to? I could pick a name out of a hat. And by the way, this is open to premium members and free listeners. This is open to everyone. If you're listening to this podcast, this is open to you. And I want you to win this 12-month pro plan. Now, to enter or to have a chance of winning, what you need to do is create a slideshow of between 5 and 10 images only, no more than 10. Going to make it easy for me to judge this. So a slideshow of between 5 and 10 images. The photos need to be in black and white only, and that's purely for fun. That's for me. It makes it a bit more of a level playing field as far as judging goes. So black and white, 5 to 10 images. And the brief or the theme of your slideshow is for you to show one family member in their natural environment. That's one of your family members in their natural environment. And it could be anything. I'm going to leave that open to you to interpret the brief. So 5 or 10 photos, black and white. Create the slideshow. It's got to be created with Smart Slides. If you don't have it, it's fine. Go and get the trial version. It's free, and you get to see how quick and easy it is to create one of these slideshows. Once you create your slideshow, you'll be given a link inside the slideshow software, and I want you to email me that link. And my email address is andrew@photobizx.com. Okay, so go to Smart Slides. I've got a link inside the show notes, or just Google Smart Slides. You'll find it. Go and get the trial version. If you haven't already got the real thing, create a slideshow, 5 to 10 images only, black and white, showing one of your family members in their natural environment. I'm going to choose a winner, and I'm looking for the slideshow that impacts me the most. So I don't know how your slideshow might impact me, but I don't care if it's humor, if it makes me cry, if it makes me stop and think, reevaluate my own life, if it's shallow and humorous or deep and thought-provoking. I don't care. I just want it to have some kind of impact. So have some fun with this. Get involved, please. I'm looking forward to seeing your work and sharing your work if you're happy for me to do so, and finding a winner. So the competition is open for 10 days, or entries are open for 10 days, and they will close Wednesday, the 22nd of March, 2017. But I've got links and details in the show notes if you need them. All right, I'm going to play this short phone conversation slash interview that I did with Mark Rossetto. You would have heard me mention Mark. Well, I've interviewed him for the podcast back in episode 184, and I also talked about his upcoming workshops, Shoot to Sell, and then Sell with ProSelect. And the reason this phone call came about was because he advertised on Facebook that he was looking for 5 local photographers to come and watch him do a pre-sale session or pre-shoot sale session. And then he was going to do the shoot with a family and then go into a sale session. And these 5 photographers got to watch over his shoulders. It was like a fly on the wall type of thing. And I got in touch with Mark when I saw that because, first of all, I would love to have been there, but I couldn't because he lives too far away. And I thought, I wonder if he's going to be taping this, because I would love to get a copy and share this with premium members. And he told me, look, he's not. But we started talking about other things and how a lot of this stuff is covered in the course anyway. And then he went on to tell me about the 13 different ways to close a sale. And then I had to stop him. I said, stop. I want to record this so listeners can hear it, because this is good stuff. So I called him back the next day. It was bad timing, but I got as much, well, Mark shared as much as he possibly could before the kids came barging in the door. I know there was interruptions and we sort of went all over the place a little bit, but I think what he shared with me and you in this little snippet is worth hearing. So here's Mark Rossetto. All right, so the other day we were chatting on the phone and I was asking you about your upcoming workshops, and we got straight into sales somehow. I don't know how. And I put a post inside the members Facebook group and I mentioned that you talked about a whole series of sales, I guess, closing techniques or even just sales strategies that you have. And I think you said there was 13 or something crazy. And you shared 3 of them with me, which I shared with members inside the group. And I can't understand how you can have 13 different closing styles. And for me and the listener, should we just learn one, or do we need to know lots to be good at selling?
Look, you don't need to know all 13. It's one of those things, when you've got more tools in your tool belt, you've got more default to go back to. So generally people pick maybe 3 or 4, or maybe, yeah, about 3 or 4, and you'll find that you naturally will default to those. So when you naturally default to them, you won't realize that it's a closing style until someone like myself points out that you've just got a closing style. But yeah, there are 13 of them that I use on a regular basis, and but there's generally a few of my favorites as well.
Okay, so do you think if you were to sit in my studio when I'm going through a sales session, or Tennille was doing a sales session to a portrait client, do you think she's using one or more of these techniques without herself even knowing it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We do it all the time. In our daily conversation, we do it. One of the simple ones is an alternate close. The alternate kind of close is pretty much A or B. So do you want the frame or canvas? If you guys have some kids out there, do you want toast or cereal? And it's just a closing style. It's just that you don't know it's a closing style. You just naturally say, which one do you want, toast or cereal? And when they know, I want toast, do you want peanut butter or jam? I want jam. Great, I'll make jam.
Okay, so in the photography sense, so they've decided on the photo, even the size, so you're just closing by saying canvas or frame print?
Yeah, pretty much. So all of our products, and it's also good to note with the closes that we had, all of our products were the same price. So frame and the canvas is the same price. So it didn't really matter which one they would like. Just pick one. Do you want frame or canvas? It's the same price.
Does it matter if they're different prices?
Generally not, because then the question is, do you want a 20 by 30 or a 30 by 40? Yeah. A or B? Pick one. And they will generally default to whatever you say is what they will pick.
I want to talk about closing styles, but I mean, you bring up an interesting topic straight away. Again, another one, simplifying your price list. So do you recommend like having small, medium, large, or one size fits all, and so all one price, you just choose the size? Like, is there an easy way or a good way to sell product?
Yeah, I found it that if it's easy to sell, it's easy to buy, because a confused mind will just, they'll just start saying no. And if you can keep it really simple, it's easier. So we did it like this, Andrew. I'll explain it this way. So I'll give you an idea. A 20 by 30 inch, a 20 by 20 inch, and a 30 by 12 inch, the size, the ratio, is all the same price. Then you go frame or canvas, it's the same price. So we used to say it like this. Pick the images that you love, in the shape that you love, in the style that you love. So they're not going, which one's cheaper and what size is that and how much is this one? So if you've got an image that suits a panoramic above a hallway kind of cupboard, let's just say, because it's a longer hallway, and the image that you chose is a panoramic, well, choose a panoramic image in a panoramic style in, say, a frame, and it's all the same price.
Well, okay, so you're just trying to make life easy for everyone, for yourself and the client.
Yeah, totally. Because when it comes to the nitty gritty of the cost of, like, the cost of goods, the differences between the cost of goods between the frame and a canvas, specifically in those three sizes, it might be $30, $20, $50, $80. But when you're selling the artwork for $800, $900, and $1,000, you know what? The extra $10, $20, by the time they agonize and spend the extra 20 minutes trying to pick what size it is because they want that price, but they want that size and they like that material, just pick one.
Okay, got it.
Do yourself a favor and just pick one.
Yeah, okay. Give me another closing style.
Okay, another closing style is we spoke about the trial close. So the trial close is what we spoke about the other day as well that you put up on Facebook. It's when you're closing off smaller questions. So you would say something like, do you love this image or this one? So I've gone an alternate close and they've gone, I like image A. And you're like, great. Do you like it in a square or a panoramic? I like it in a square. And frame or canvas? I like it in a canvas. And what size? A 20 by 20 or a 24 by 24? And they might go 24 by 24. So in other words, they've just told you the image they like, in the size they like, in the shape they like, in the product they like.
Done. That's a close. You got it. You got the sale.
It's a close. We got the sales. But if I said, do you like image number A in a 24 by 24 inch square in a frame? And they say, nah, not really. You're kind of putting yourself up against the wall because you're like, you don't even know where it went wrong. You might have, it's almost like a mastermind kind of code. You've got the right image and the right shape, but wrong product. But will they tell you yes or no?
Okay. So start at the very basic and then go step by step by step, removing all the different obstacles as you go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you can do little things like that, which makes life nice and easy.
Cool. All right. What was another one? You told me another one, the assumption close.
The assumption close. The assumption close is you kind of keep continuing on with the transaction. So let's say you've selected the images. So you're in Pro Select, you're selecting the images. You've got a particular layout that they've picked out and you're like, do you like the layout? Yes. So you're doing the trial close. Awesome. And you like it in a frame? Yes. And those images are great? Yes. And that size is what you want? Yes. Then just put it into your little order form and write it up. So that would be $2,400. How would you like to pay for that? Oh, okay. You can pay half and half or in full. I'll pay half and half. Okay, let's do it.
So that's almost like a combination of a trial close. Oh, sorry, is it a trial close? Yeah, I guess so.
It's a trial close. It's an alternate choice close and a trial close, and then you just keep on going and assuming that that's what they want because they've said yes so many times that you now ask for money and see if they keep going. And it's not to trick them. It's just if they don't want to pay, Andrew, they're not going to pay. They're just going to go, no, I don't want to do it, or that's not kind of what I thought.
Yeah, okay.
Nine times out of 10, they'll just keep going.
Now, you explained the reduction to ridiculous to me, and I think I got that one. So if someone wanted to order, say, place a $2,400 order for a bunch of portraits, and it's too expensive, they can't afford that, then we would offer them, I guess, a lay-by type program to pay it off, and you reduce it to an amount that they're comfortable paying each week or each month.
Exactly. How much do you see on marketing and TV that your health insurance is only the price of a cup of coffee of $3.50 a week?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the reduction to ridiculous is used all the time. Think about the home kind of shopping shows. And you can have all of this for six easy payments of $29. So they're taking a product that's, you know, in a photography world, it might be $2,400 and deposit might be 30% and ends up being about $23 a week.
So would you do that? Would you suggest to a photographer that's listening to take $23 a week over, you know, 100 weeks?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question too. The reduction to the ridiculous was perfect when take-home lay-by was in force. For those people at home that don't know, take-home lay-by was a financial company which you pretty much get your client to pay a minimum of a third, and then you produce the artwork as you normally would if you produce it in 4 to 6 weeks. On the pickup, the client would sign the take-home lay-by form, which is an agreement, and then take-home lay-by would pay you the full amount that you were owed instantly. And then take-home lay-by take all the risk as the client pays it off over a period of 6 or 12 months.
Are they paying interest to take-home lay-by in that case?
They are. Take-home lay-by took a nice chunk of it, unfortunately. But
from the photographer, or the client pays more?
From the photographer.
Right, okay. But you're getting the benefit of getting paid up front, and you're also getting the sale that you may not have got.
Exactly. So someone that can afford $25 a week to go on take-home lay-by to get a $3,000 sale, opposed to getting a sale that would pay in full or half and a half for $1,000, you kind of win some, lose some. It's kind of like there's no way they would have stretched that far anyway, no matter what you could do. And like you said, Andrew, you don't want to be doing $30 a week for 24 months, doing credit card payments, and then by the time they get their artwork, they don't even remember they got the photos done.
So what do you suggest now? Because take-home lay-by, I think you told us, has gone away.
So take-home lay-by has changed hands with its internal structure, would be the best way to say it. So they're not taking on any new photographers at the moment as of this particular time. Now, that might change in the future. So any of their existing clients they have, they honour the same system, but they're not taking on any new clients. And I know they've got a lot of photographers wanting to use their service, but at the moment it's pretty much a no. Now, this hard part is there's no alternate at this stage. There's no other company that will allow you to pretty much take the product home, pay up front, and then they take the responsibility for the payments until the product is made.
Right, okay.
So it's a bit of a loss at the moment for the industry, but fingers crossed they come back with an alternative really soon. So I'm on the phone with them every couple of weeks to kind of chase it up.
Okay. Are they Australian only, or do they have members or photographers from around the world?
I do believe it's Australia only, but don't quote me on that. It's an Australian company. I don't believe it goes out of Australia.
Where would the overseas listener even start to look for someone like Take Home Lay-By in, would you suggest, photography groups or finance companies? Like, how would you even find someone?
Look, there's a lot of finances companies who do online credit payments and automatic direct debits and things. But you're going back to your traditional lay-by a system where they pay a deposit, they pay off the full amount, they get the product when the payments are completed.
And that was the big advantage with take-home lay-by, is the client and you get paid, the client gets a product and you get paid straight away.
Yeah, even though they took a big nasty kind of chunk out of it, either way, you still got paid instantly. It was absolutely brilliant.
What sort of chunk are you talking about, 25%?
Yeah, it was depending on the value, but it was up there with the 20%-ish.
Okay.
Now, I just want to tell you one last close I really like, and it's the conditional close. The conditional close is when you're closing on a condition. So you would say, if you keep the order as it is, I'll throw in the extra kind of 2 8x10s and we'll make it the same price. So if someone's umming and ahhing about doing 10 prints, but they've got 12 images on the screen and they just can't get down the extra two, and you've sat there for 45 minutes and you're umming and ahhing about which two you're going to take out, and they don't want to take the extra two out, but they don't want to pay for the extra two, sometimes it's easier just to go, you know what, I'll give you the extra two for the same price as the 10 if you want to go ahead. And they go, okay, let's just do that.
Okay, that works beautifully, because I do that with my wedding photography album sales. It works. So what I give, I think this is the same. So we design a 40-sided album and they might have ordered a 20, and I'll say that, you know, we'll throw in 10 extra sides. So we're going to give you $1,000 off if you take it as it is. If you want to make it smaller, then you've got to take out those 10 pages I'm giving you for free first. So I guess that's similar.
Exactly. You're pretty much, it's a conditional kind of close. I'll do this if you do that.
Is that the one you like the most? Is that the one you recommend we try, or do you do all of them together?
Oh, I kind of do all of them together. There's so much here. You know, another one is when you do a management close or supplier close. That's when you, if negotiations are going on for a while and you're just going around in circles, you've come up with the perfect scenario of what they really want, and then you kind of go, you know what, I know it's X amount, let's say it's 2,200, but they only want to pay 2,000, and you're kind of getting to that standstill and everyone's just stopped talking. You can go, you know what, let me call my supplier or let me chat to the manager and I'll see what I can do. Then you switch to your conditional close. If I can get that, whatever it is, for $2,000, are you happy to go ahead today? And they'll be like, yep, that's what I want. Now, okay. If you work by yourself, just step out of the room, maybe go to the toilet, grab water, go back in the room and go, yep, I've contacted my supplier. I can do that for you. Great. They think that they've achieved what they needed to. They've had a win.
I love this. Okay, so I do something like this in my studio with Tennille.
Yeah.
So she does a sale, and then if she's at a standstill, she'll say, I've got to go and check with Andrew and Linda.
Exactly.
And then she comes up and says, she leaves out that really good part that you just said, the conditional close. She doesn't add that in. She doesn't walk out saying, if I can get this for you guys, are you happy to take it? So that's the part that's missing. That's the good bit.
Yeah, that's a massive bit, because what will happen if you don't say that and then you go, like I used to speak to my staff member, or they used to come to us and go, look, this is what's happening. We've got to this. I want to do this. Can we do that? Sometimes you just go, yeah, go for it. But the thing is, sometimes if you don't make that conditional statement before you leave the room, you're going to come in and go, just spoke to the manager, or I've just contacted my supplier, because that they're buying it as a bundle, we can make it cheaper for you. And you go, and they'll go, that's great. Can you also throw in this? And that's where you get caught out. So you've got to have that conditional. This is, I'll speak to them if this is what we agree on first, agree on that first, then speak to your manager or your partner or someone, and go from there.
Got it. Cool. Mate, I know your kids and family coming home in just a minute. Can I ask you one more question?
Fire away.
When we were chatting the other day, you told me, because I was asking you about your fly on the wall demo that you did for 5 photographers.
Yeah, cool. It was awesome.
You told me that, and it blew me away, that you're actually selling to the client even before you pick up the camera at the session.
Oh, yeah. The sales start when I pick up the mobile phone or the phone to call them in the first place.
Well, I mean, I sort of get that, because I mean, I talk a little bit about products and stuff as well, but you, I mean, you're actually doing it even at the shoot. You're still selling, but before you've taken a photo.
You sell at the shoot, but you don't really sell at the shoot. So you're not sitting there going, I'm going to photograph this and you're going to buy that. All that you're is you're kind of making sure that what you're saying is going to line up with what you're shooting, and what you're shooting is for the end product in mind. So there's no point shooting anything if you don't know where it's going to go on the wall or what you're shooting for. If you do that, you're literally shooting blind, and then you're getting to the design appointment and you're pretty much not saying, where would you love to display the artwork? And, you know, this is the images that you absolutely, this is what you were here for. We've shot what you've loved to have. Where would you want to put it in your house? You're more saying, so we've done this shoot. Do you like these images? Because you don't even know that what they want in the first place.
That's what I'm doing. So I'm doing it wrong. I'm going to shoot at 6 o'clock tonight. So it's 4:30 now. And I'll be totally honest with you here. I don't know anything about this family. They came through a voucher. I'm going to turn up and have a chat. I'll try and get an idea then what they want, but I really don't know what they want. So are you suggesting, so when I get there, I need to talk about what they want for their house even before I start shooting?
Yeah, and it's kind of like, and when you say it, it's all in the delivery. So you're not going to go, hey, so guys, my name's Andrew and I'm your photographer. We're going to take some photos now, but before I do, what do you want to buy? Because I can't really be bothered taking photos if you're not going to buy something. You kind of need to go on a different approach and going, lovely to meet you guys. This is going to be such a great time. Look, I really want to make sure that I'm going to shoot, what we shoot tonight is going to be what you absolutely love and what you love to display on your wall. To kick off, whereabouts in the home would you love to display the artwork? And they might say a living room. And, you know, this is kind of cutting to the chase pretty quickly. And you might say, if you could have the most ultimate family image or kids, or shots of the kids or that ultimate family shot, what would you love to see on the wall? They might go, I really want a family shot. They might go, oh, it's more about the kids. And you go, okay, so what are the kids actually doing? Are they looking at each other? Are they looking at the camera? What kind of shot do you want? So what you're kind of doing is you're painting a picture and you're helping them visualize what they're going to buy. So then also, too, you're creating a shoot list in your own mind. And if you can create a shoot list, you're kind of almost there to what they wanted to have you be the photographer for. Now, if you spend all this time, Andrew, taking photos of the family in six different locations and places, it's absolutely irrelevant because it's not what they want. Actually, I've got a really cool example, if you can bear with me with this.
Yeah.
Really cool example. So I got a photographer to do some photos of my two kids, and I had one shot in mind. I want a shot of the two kids looking at the camera. I won't give away too much, but I had one image in mind, the two kids looking at the camera doing a certain thing. Uh-huh. And the photographer did two or three shots in about 5 minutes of that particular thing and then went on a totally different tangent. She shot her own shoots, you could say. When it came to choosing the images, guess what I did? So where are the shots of the two kids? So I've looked at the shots of the two kids and I went, that's the one I want. And they go, well, what about all the others? And I'm like, yeah, not interested in those. And they're like, but they're beautiful. I'm like, they're awesome. I actually really like them, but this is what I really wanted.
I'm not sure what the message is now. Did she shoot too much, or she should have consulted with you more after she got the shots in the bag? Like, what should she have done to get a better sale?
If she had have shot, got more shots of the kids in the different varieties that we liked, because she tried to come back to it afterwards and she went on to other things. So I guess what I'm trying to say is make sure you absolutely nail the shot and deliver exactly what the client wants as the key initiative. Then shoot the rest. Have a play with it, because you don't know what people are going to buy afterwards. They might change their mind to get albums and things. But when someone like me goes, I want a shot on the wall in the lounge room of the two kids in a 60 by 40 inch canvas, and this is what I would really love to shoot. As the photographer, make sure you nail the shot. Make sure that the client's happy and you've shot what they really loved. And then shoot the other varieties and styles and start to tell the story as well.
let me explain my shoot this afternoon, how I think it's going to be. So this family, I know they want shots of the kids, the two kids. So let's say I take them to the first location outside. I get some shots of the kids. I'm also thinking they're probably going to want a family shot. So do you say I shouldn't even worry about getting the family shot in that same location, just move to the next spot and keep getting more of the kids until I'm 100% happy? Or should I try and get another combination in that first spot with the whole family before I move on and keep concentrating on the kids?
Yeah, it's pretty much saying if someone's looking for something really specific, make sure you get that shot first and foremost,
mm-hmm.
and then play as much as you like. You know, get more combinations of the kids in a different locations and shots with kids and mum and kids and cat dad and kids by themselves and tell that family story. But if someone really has something specific in mind, just make sure you nail the shot, because it doesn't matter what all the other images are, even though you think that they're brilliant. Sometimes you've got to also deliver on what the client really wants. And if the client wants a basic shot of the mum and dad and kids looking at the camera, really quite structured and boring and straightforward, and you're like, but we can do so much more, just make sure you nail the shot and then shoot the rest anyway. But I guess what I'm trying to say is make sure you nail the images of what they really love and then have a play and really create some beautiful stories around the images that they love, which will hopefully, fingers crossed, do the same thing that I've done now. And now I've got a 30 by 30 inch acrylic and I'm doing 4 14 by 14 inches around the acrylic to tell the story.
That's a good sale.
It's a great sale. So they upsold me completely, because they did get the other shots. But you just need to make sure that if someone really, really, really wants something specific, that you shoot specific in mind, then continue on with different styles and different layouts and different stories, but tell that stories in multiple ways. That's going to increase your sale.
Okay. All right. I'm going to do my best to walk in and see what this couple want, or this family want this afternoon, and see if I can maximize my chance of getting a good sale.
Yeah. It should be, all of that should be done on the phone.
I feel guilty telling you what I've done
and,
nothing.
And it's pretty much on the phone. It is on the send out a survey, the pre-shoot questionnaire, and then it should be done at the fire-up call 2 to 3 days beforehand. And then before the shoot, you just bring it all together and just confirm exactly what they wanted and the different ideas they had in mind. Have they taken a photo of the room and the walls that they wanted to put the artwork in? Do you know where it's going to go?
Mate, you know, I know what my problem is. I've gotten lazy.
Yeah.
And I'm getting into my own little routine, shooting what I want to shoot, what I like, in the nice light and the nice locations. And, I've gotten lazy, so I need to step it up.
You know what? And sometimes for your ultimate client, I love these clients that just go, Mark, just do what you do. You're happy with anything. And you're like, they're like, just do what you do, because whatever you do, we're going to love. So, Andrew, for the right client who goes, just do the shoot. Whatever you do is awesome, because I love your work. But every now and then, probably 50% of the time, you're going to have clients who want to have some sort of story in mind or something in mind, that you just need to make sure that you know what they want. Otherwise, you're absolutely shooting blind.
Well, I think what I'm using what you just said as a get out of jail card, or as an option to be lazy, because I'm going in there saying, what do you want? What are you after? Do you want me to do this, this, or this? Or do you want me to just shoot what I normally shoot? So I'm also planting that seed for them to say, you just shoot what you want, but it's me being lazy. It's not me being smart. So I've got to fix that up.
Sometimes whatever you do is what they love. And sometimes they go, oh, where's the shot of, I thought we're, why did we go to that part? Why didn't we? And you're like, oh, because the lighting was nice.
All right.
It's all about learning to shoot to sell.
This is the stuff you're covering in your workshop, and which is going all around Australia, isn't it?
It is. It is. The client education is just, it's absolutely pivotal like, it's absolutely so important to make sure that you, A, inform the client of the process and what you're doing, and educate the client on the great experience you're about to have, to set yourself up for the win of the photo shoot, to be able to walk into the design room choosing pretty pictures and choosing images to suit what you've already spoken about in the layouts that they love, then going into the shoot pretty much blind with a name and a location, to showing the images on ProSelect and go, so what would you like to do with these? Because when you get into that stage, you're kind of, you're at their mercy. You're kind of, whatever they say goes, because otherwise you're going to be backtracking. So set yourself up for the win, Andrew. Set yourself up for the win, because you're going to work so hard, you might as well shoot to sell and get paid for it at the end.
The stuff that you teach, will it still work if the client has come to me through a free session, a voucher or Facebook ad or something like that?
Of course. It works with everything. It doesn't matter where the client comes from. There's the famous kind of a saying that clients are made, they're not found. You hear it all the time. That, oh, I just can't find the right clients. I'm getting the wrong clients. I'm getting clients that don't spend money. You're not getting the wrong clients that don't spend money. They've got, some people might have the money. They just don't want to spend it with you because you haven't shown them the value of what you do. The clients are made, they're not found.
Mark, I appreciate it, mate. I'm going to add links to your workshop, and I know that you encourage listeners to go and have a look and check out the page. And I think you've even told me that you've got a Facebook pixel on the page, so listeners can also see how that works as well, because they then should see ads or posts from you in their timeline if they go and visit your page, which is another whole different aspect of sales and selling and marketing.
Do you want me to tell you the secret of what we did?
Yeah.
It's quite funny. The fast video that you see is targeted for one specific campaign. So if you click on that video, you will then get sent campaign number two. Campaign number two is designed around people that have seen that video but have also clicked on the workshops page on the website. So you will get a different campaign to the first people. Campaign number three are people that have seen the video, clicked on the workshop page, but then clicked on a specific state. And I've got a campaign specifically for each individual state. It goes through a three-phase marketing system. Each stage, you're going to be given different bits of information that get going to take you further down the funnel to hopefully, get you to come to the workshop. That's what it's designed for. And then, as the kicker, we're doing a book your spot for $290 and go on a payment plan to pay it later.
Reduction to the ridiculous.
The reduction to the ridiculous. Exactly. For $200, see, now you know my secret, Sandra. For $290, reserve your spot, get in to do the workshop, pay it off fortnightly or weekly, because I want to take away the excuse, so I guess the closing style of, we can't afford it now, it's too much. But I'm kind of putting my money where my mouth is and saying, if you pay the $290, come to this particular workshop, pay it off later as you go, implement what you've learned, and you'll make the money back very easily. $1,290, it's one pretty average kind of sale. It's nothing that special.
I'm looking forward to watching the video again now and seeing what and clicking on a state to see what ads I see in Facebook. That's really cool. All right, Mark, I'll let you go and enjoy the kids and the family. You have an awesome weekend. But yeah, thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Anytime, Andrew. Looking forward to it. Speak to you soon.
All right. I hope you got something out of that from Mark. I certainly did. I didn't even know I was doing some of the things that I do, or I didn't realize Tennille does some of the selling the way she does the sales in our studio. It was really, really cool. I hope you got something out of it. That's the main thing. If you want to learn more from Mark, he did mention his workshop. I mentioned it earlier. I've got links to it in the show notes. Go and check out his website, how the Facebook ads work in conjunction with the page he has set up for his workshops on his website. It's pretty cool the way it all ties together. Plus, you get to find out a lot more of what he's covering in that two-day workshop. And again, I've got links to all this in the show notes.
Want to know more about Andrew? Follow him on Instagram at Andrew_Helmich.
To close out today's show, I wanted to share with you some new software that I'm using in my business, and it's to do with social media posts. I was using some software called Meet Edgar. I loved it when I discovered it because what it allowed me to do was to create social media posts and schedule them. And I know there's a lot of free apps that allow you to do this, but what Meet Edgar did, which really sold me on the software, was it allowed me to create the posts and store them into different folders and have them recycle automatically at certain times of the year. And that would work for Facebook and for Twitter. So let's say, for example, I wrote a blog post on wet weather options for brides getting married on the Central Coast, which is a blog post that I have. And it's a popular blog post. I don't want to write that blog post and only share it once on social media because that really is an evergreen piece of content. Really, I'm happy for brides and grooms to see that, or mainly brides, to see that post two or three or even four times a year because it's unlikely the same bride is going to see it anyway because of the organic reach that Facebook is giving us these days. So with Meet Edgar, what I would do was create the post, have it go to Facebook, and then have it recycle every 3 months and be delivered automatically. So I could set it and forget it. So the more I filled it up, the more posts I'd have running into my feed continually, and I wouldn't have to keep coming up with new content all the time. So look, it was all going great. It was simple and easy, but it was expensive. Like it was $50 a month. I weighed it up and I thought, look, this is worthwhile for me, particularly because I have an assistant, Doi, who helps me with my social media. And that has been a lifesaver for me. So she has access to the software. She has access to my social media accounts and she helps create these posts and schedule them and send them out. But still, $50 a month, it was killing me. It was too much. So anyway, then I get an email from the guys at Viral Tag. They have blown me out of the water. Just amazing. So Viral Tag does everything that Meet Edgar does, but it does more and it does it better. So here's what else Viral Tag does. It also will post to Instagram and to Pinterest, which I know is more likely to affect you. You can also use it for LinkedIn and Tumblr. So they're two social media platforms that I don't use. I'm not sure if you do. So you can use it to access more social media profiles that you have. And not only your Facebook page, but also your personal profile, which is very cool. And it's half the price, which I really loved. That was one of the biggest selling points. There's a free trial with it. And here's the real kicker, because I don't know if you're already set up with another program or have something like this going for yourself, but I hate changing software. I spoke to Sudhir, who's the guy behind Viral Tag, and I said, mate, I love it. I'm really tempted, but just moving everything over is going to be a nightmare. And he said, no, Andrew, we'll do that for you. So he went in, he got access to our Meet Edgar account, and he transferred all our existing posts and images into Viral Tag, which was very cool. So it was a seamless transition. I can't recommend it more highly, and particularly if you have an assistant helping with you, or even if you're doing this yourself. This is a great way to have content just continually flowing into your account. Now, with Instagram, it's a little bit different. You can't have a program post directly to Instagram. I think that will get you penalized. So you have the Viral Tag app on your phone, which is what I do. It sends me a reminder when there's something ready to go. I click post to Instagram and it goes into Instagram with my hashtags and comments, everything all ready to go. It really is cool. Inside the Viral Tag dashboard, you also have thumbnails of the photos that go with each of your posts. So this isn't just for text. You can have images going in here as well. Anyway, I'm not sure if you knew about it. I really wanted to share it with you. It's been absolutely seamless for us. Both Doi and I are happy using it. We like it. It took a little bit of getting used to the different layout, which happens when you change programs. But all in all, it's been great. Now, what Doi has done for you and for me is she's added some screenshots. And I've added them or included them inside the show notes for today's episode. And you can see there that when you create a blog post on your website or your blog and you have the Viral Tag Chrome extension installed, you then have the option to click on a little button, like a pin it button that only you see. And it gives you the option to send it to Viral Tag for scheduling for later. So super simple. So I've got screenshots of that inside the show notes. I've got them there for Facebook and for Twitter, so you can see exactly what's happening. If you give this a try, there's a couple of little things you might want to know like how to get the thumbnails to show up. So I've explained that, or Doi has explained that inside the show notes. So if you want more information about it, you can hit Sudhir up at VitalTag, or you can ask me a question and I'll answer it as best I can for you. But yeah, definitely worth checking out if you want to automate more of your social media posting and make life a little bit easier on yourself. To find it or to find out more about it, head to vitaltag.com. I think that is, better double check that URL before I give you that. So it's vitaltag.com, www.viraltag.com, VIRALTAG.com. And I hope that's helpful. Alrighty, that is going to wrap up today's show. It's been a massive one. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you've got any comments or questions or suggestions for the show, hit me up in the show notes. You can find them at photobizx.com/210, 210 for today's episode. I look forward to chatting to you there. If you're a premium member, no doubt we'll be hooking up. I say hooking up like have a chat, but I know that has different connotations. So it's not that kind of Facebook group. But I will see you inside the members Facebook group and we'll chat there. All right, have an awesome week and I'll chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.